702. Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane. Email her on refilwem@702.co.za.
And as we do at this time of the morning on a Saturday, we talk all things motoring. And I'm happy to welcome to the show car enthusiast and host of the podcast Eat, Sleep, Drive, Repeat, Spike Ballantyne. Good morning.
Morning, Refilwe. How are you?
You know what, Spike? I am doing well. Well enough, at least. I hope you are too.
Excellent.
Listen.
Excellent. Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Cool. So before you give us this week's car review, let's dip into some industry news, Spike. And this, of course, comes with news of the new Land Rover Defender online launch. That was yesterday, yeah?
No, it's actually coming up on Thursday.
Oh, it is coming up. So, okay, yeah?
Yeah.
So this is happening on... Sorry, Spike. Yeah. This is happening next week. It's happening online. And clearly the future of car launches, they won't stop rolling them out, but it's all going to be virtual. Very, very different for a car enthusiast and a car journalist like yourself who is used to attending in sometimes very, very exotic and beautiful locations. Yeah. How does it feel?
You know, the thing is, it's a bit of a double-edged thing for me. You know, the launches, as you say, are generally quite grand affairs. If you know, they're held locally, they're held in the most beautiful places. If you if you're lucky enough to attend internationally, they are 5-star events. And you know, for me, quite honestly, I think sometimes they're a little bit over the top.
Mm-hmm.
So I think also for a lot of guys, you know, that while the travel is you know, it is nice to get out and travel. I think it can be quite fatiguing for some people.
Sure.
And I know some people actually who have left the job because the travel requirement and the travel element is just so intense.
Sure.
So I think from that point of view, it's good and it's bad. I think from a manufacturer point of view, they're probably going to save themselves a lot of money if they continue to do online launches rather than sort of in-person launches.
Mm.
I still think that there will be launches that happen, you know, with actual test drives and that, because there's no better way to show off the product than getting behind the wheel, obviously.
Yeah.
But for the moment, as you say, you know, the online launches are the way it's being done the world over. Mm. So I'm not quite sure when we'll return to that sort of live launch, if you like.
Mm. So, I mean, just to pull back the curtain a little bit on how you do what you do, right? So you do have that launch. You talk about the fact that it's quite over the top. Sometimes it's a destination situation, and they'll always be that test drive on the day of the launch. What do things look like these days with virtual launches, or I guess sometimes with just that press release and a, hey guys, do you want to drive the vehicle? Is that what it's like?
So it is basically that, yes. At the moment, with the live launches, what they do is there'll be a kind of Zoom or an online sort of display, and then they'll run through a presentation like they would at a normal live launch.
Mm-hmm.
And that you get the product details and you know, get all the information that way. And then the car becomes available to drive on a schedule. So test cars are made available on a schedule that they book per journalist. And then depending on which manufacturer you're dealing with, you get the car for a set amount of time. So it's either 4 days or 5 days or a week.
Mm.
And then that's the way you get to test drive the car. So the difference with doing it this way and having a live launch is that very often when you attend a live launch, the drives that you go on are set on routes that are intended to show off the best aspects of the car.
Sure.
So, you know, if you do a sporty car, you know, they'll do it in Cape Town on some beautiful mountain roads. And, you know, you get to sample the kind of handling and the dynamics of the car. Whereas if you drive the car yourself at home, you know, it's left up to you to decide where best to try and find out what the car is about.
Mm. And the buzz or the expectations around this new Land Rover Defender online launch, any industry sort of crib notes that you've got and insights so far?
Well, the reason I wanted to chat about it is because it's you know, this is the Land Rover Defender is obviously an iconic, it's one of those iconic cars, you know, it's been around for decades. It's got a cult following. And this particular launch has been a little bit more, it's a little bit more involved than the other launches. Where the other launches are, you know, for example, Audi launched the new A6 the other day. It was a bunch of journalists, and they set up at their office, and they had, the management and the tech team chatting about the car. This particular launch is going to be live. The Land Rover Defender launch is going to be live on the Land Rover South Africa YouTube channel.
Sure.
It's a 110-minute long special about the Land Rover Defender. It's hosted by
Stay for the entire 110 minutes?
I think I might actually. This is a car that's really quite close to my heart. I've been on some epic journeys in a Defender, and I really like the look of the new one.
Sure.
So I'm keen to see what it's about. It's going to be hosted by Kola Njinga. It's got appearances by Brian Habana and Kingsley Holgate, the big explorer, Land Rover ambassador. And by all accounts, it should be a well-attended launch. I mean, if you look at the hype around the car since it got announced earlier this year, Land Rover say they've had 12,000 configurations by customers on their website.
Oh my!
That's locally.
Sure.
I don't think there's going to be 12,000 orders, but certainly 12,000 people are interested enough to go and spec their own Land Rover.
Yeah, and spend the time tinkering.
Yeah, exactly. So that launch is happening on Thursday at 4 p.m. and you'll find it on the Land Rover South Africa YouTube channel, and it will be live.
All right, fantastic. So all 110 minutes and celebrity packed. Your own sort of expectations before we move on. I know that you just said that you've been a lifelong fan and you've loved this car. What to you makes it so special, and what are you expecting might improve, if anything, at this point?
Well, I think the obvious improvement that they could make is to the daily drivability of a Defender. I think one of the kind of, I don't want to say jokes, but one of the things about a Land Rover Defender was, it was a great car once you got to where you were going. So if you were taking it on an off-road adventure, once you were off-road, it was phenomenal. But getting there, you really had to forgive it a lot to live with it on a daily basis. Heavy clutch, heavy steering, suspension set up purely for off-road. So I think in terms of daily refinement and comfort, they've definitely made improvements to that. I think the styling is very much it's very much modernized, and I think it's a really, really nice looking car as well.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing it in action and to seeing specifically what they've done on the inside and the refinements on that level.
Yeah. Well, speaking of jokes and or interesting things, it seems the Land Rover's got itself a bit of a doppelganger. Talk to me about the, how do I pronounce it, Grenadier by, Ineos? Tell me about that.
Ineos. So the reason I wanted to chat about this is, if you haven't seen it, the Grenadier is a 4x4 built by a British company called Ineos.
Sure.
And the story goes that the chairman of this Ineos company, which is a pretty big company, this guy's not short of money. His name is Jim Ratcliffe. He apparently approached Land Rover for the specs of the old Defender. Once Land Rover announced the new Defender, he went to them and said, "Well, can I have the old one to reproduce?" And they said no, obviously.
Sure.
So he went and threw a lot of money at a project to design and build his own 4x4, which, the company describes as a stripped-back, utilitarian, hard-working 4x4.
Sure.
Which is pretty much what the Defender started life as. And if you look at the car, it does look like an original Land Rover Defender clone.
100%.
It's styled very, very similarly. Technically, from a technical point of view, judging by the spec sheet in the press, it should be very capable. I mean, it's got all the Land Rover Defender traits. It's got a ladder frame chassis. It's got beam axle. It's got permanent all-wheel drive. It's got lockable diffs. And it's also powered by a range of BMW engines.
And, sticking to the sort of technical aspect of it as well, when they were doing that research, apparently the chief designer says they looked at tractors, helicopters, all sorts of differently really hard-working vehicles. And it looks the way they've described it, right? But why not build? Clearly, Ratcliffe, the owner of Ineos, loves this car and wanted to be part of its sort of long legacy and heritage. But why copy so closely or just outright, replicate? Where's the pride in that? Where's the the creativity and imagination? Yeah. I'm sorry, does he get into trouble for this?
No, because it's obviously not a direct copy. If you look at it, you think, oh, well, you can see quite clearly what it's based on.
Yeah.
And it's I agree with you completely. I mean, the point is, you know, this is a British company using, you know, German engineering, and they're building the car either in France or in Wales. They haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, generally people are okay with this. My point is that if an Indian manufacturer or a Chinese manufacturer had come up with this, there would have been a huge hoo-ha about how they're just ripping off Land Rover.
Yeah.
But I think because it's been built by an Englishman, it's given it a sort of sheen of respectability.
That's such an interesting dynamic. I mean, I used to have a fat laugh when I was living in China. One of my neighbors used to drive another Land Rover rip-off and replica, and and the Landwind, yeah. right? And I always used to chuckle every time I drove. I walked past it. Of course, I was walking, so not who was I to be chuckling at my neighbor's car? But exactly that you kind of looked down on it and talked about it, and it was this sort of hilarious sort of spot of like dinner time gossip and chat. But you brought up a very, very interesting dynamic there, because, you know, someone will be spotted out and about driving this Grenadier, which even to me puts me in mind of the G-Class as well. When you look at the front, you look at the window as well. So all sorts of copying going on, and goodness knows Ratcliffe has the money. Why not just throw the money at some creativity as well as some creative designers?
That's an original design.
Yeah. Really, really interesting stuff. Okay. Any sense that when they finally decide where they'll manufacture this thing, how big the production line will be, where they'll distribute and sell?
There's no final word on that. Interestingly, though, they've partnered with a company called Magna. Mm. And Magna is a massive automotive company. They work with, they're a major supplier to GM. They build things like the dual clutch gearbox in the Ferrari SF90. So this is not a small company, and they've partnered with Magna in the production. So when it does happen, they're looking at two potential sites. One is in Wales, and they're also looking at one in France. It's a former Mercedes-Benz manufacturing plant. So when they do go to production, it will be a full scale production.
Sure.
They're not going to make 8 or 10 a year. I don't think. I think they're going to run a series production of these cars and distribute them hopefully worldwide.
Yeah.
Whether they come to South Africa or not, they haven't announced anything official. But the other thing is that they did say in their press release that it wouldn't be cheap.
Sure.
They said, you know, that the engineering and the reliability, you know, is not something that they can do cheaply. So they're kind of very aware of who they're trying to sell to, and they're obviously taking a lot of pride in engineering and the build of that car.
Sure, the Grenadier and Ineos, not short on ambition at all. Speaking of another vehicle that is quite ambitious, or speaking of GM rather, which they've worked with, let's look at the Opel Crossland X. That's what you're reviewing today. Tell me about that car.
Yeah. So the Opel Crossland X is a compact SUV that is part of the Opel lineup. And Opel, of course, is a brand that's on the sort of ongoing mission to reestablish itself, you know, not just in South Africa, but around the world. They left South Africa in 2017. They were taken over by Williams Hunt locally as the retailers and distributors. And then later in 2017, PSA, who's the Peugeot Citroën, the same company that owns Peugeot and Citroën,
yes.
They completed the international takeover of Opel. And, you know, Opel was in a lot of trouble for a long time. And ever since the PSA buyout, they've been turning a profit. So they've been doing pretty well with their lineup of cars. And, of course, these days, you can't be a self-respecting manufacturer unless you have a compact SUV in your lineup, because that part of the market is just so incredibly popular.
Yeah.
So Opel obviously have one of them already called the Mokka X, which is a slightly more expensive compact SUV. So if you're a self-respecting manufacturer, if you've got one, why not have two compact SUVs? And the Opel Crossland is the second compact SUV in the local lineup.
Sure, tell me about that.
So it's if you know what the Mokka looks like, it's sort of bigger and chunkier. The Crossland X is a little bit smaller, I'd say, a little
less aggressive looking.
Well.
Yeah,
it's a little bit more stylish. It takes some elements from Opel's Adam premium subcompact car, and it's got the obvious Opel traits like the L-shaped daytime running lights and tail lights. And it's also got something that one of the elements it took from the Adam was the contrasting roof color. So we had our test car was white with a black roof. And it does make for quite a striking setup. And as I say, it is a much more stylish version of the Mokka, a much more stylish car than the Mokka.
Sure.
And for its SUV bits, it's got plastic body protection around the door stalls lower down. So it does have that sort of off-road attitude to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Talk to me about the drive.
Car arrived, When it arrived in South Africa, it was powered by a 1.2 turbo petrol motor. They then added a 1.6 turbo diesel, which is the car that we tested.
Okay.
68 kilowatts, 230 newton meters. And as diesel engines go, it is very, very diesel-like. It has a very early torque delivery on the upside, and it's also not very thirsty. I was actually surprised to find that my test driver was completely and only around town. And without even trying, I got a figure of 6.5 litres per 100 k's, which is not bad at all.
Yeah.
I think with a bit of effort, you could get it a lot lower. And then obviously, if you're doing a bit of highway driving and open road driving, it will come down even further. So quite economical, I was surprised to see. There's only one gearbox choice. It's a 5-speed manual. For the diesel motor, there's only one gearbox choice, which is a 5-speed manual.
Mm-hmm.
And like the engine, it's got its good points. The mechanicals are great. The gear ratios are spot on, but it does have a bit of an odd feel. The shifter feels a little bit loose in your hand. The gates are a little bit sticky, but really something that you need to get used to, not something that's really terrible. And just on the engine as well, I said it was very diesel. It is quite a rattly little unit. It does make a lot of noise, and you know that it's working. So it's quite an old-school diesel in that sense. But again, not terrible, just something that one would need to get used to.
Okay. And for those that are interested in the interior, the tech inside the vehicle, what is it kitted out with?
Well, the interior is pretty straightforward from a design point of view. It's kind of nothing amazing. It's nicely done. It's quite ergonomic. It's got the standard these days is the touchscreen infotainment system, which it has.
Sure.
The materials have all got a nice quality feel, and the design of once you kind of settle in and take a look around, you see that the design is actually quite sculptural. You know, there are very few buttons, so it's a very clean design as well. It does look and feel very premium, and as I say, ergonomically very good. Just like the gearbox, there's only one spec level for the diesel model. That's the Enjoy spec. And the tech that comes with that includes a smartphone integration. So it's got Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, cruise control, park distance control with a reversing camera. And then on the safety front, it's also got auto lights and wipers. It's got stability control and lane departure warning as well.
Okay, lovely. And what are we looking at price point wise for all of that?
So the price point for the diesel Enjoy model is $342,900, and that puts it in the same sort of league as the Suzuki Vitara 1.6 GL Plus, which is a little bit less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my bad. The Suzuki Vitara GL Plus is $342,900. The Crossland X is $367,900. So you're paying a sort of $20,000-$25,000 premium for the diesel diesel manual.
Okay. And for someone who is literal minded like myself, and we didn't talk boot space, and I've just been talking pregnancy in the previous segment with Dr. Nyati, am I looking at shopping wise, luggage wise, and pram wise? Can I chuck all of that into my boot?
Yeah, so it has got good space, from a passenger space all around, it's really nicely done. It's got decent headroom as well. Boot space is actually a little bit better than if you compare it to something else, like, Ford EcoSport, for example, is similarly sized vehicle. The Crossland X has got better space on average. It's about 30% more boot space on average, with the seats up or down. So it does compare pretty favorably when it comes to the practical side of things as well.
All right. We're all about practicality as well. All right, cool. So very, very quickly, before I let you go, Spike, I know that you live a fabulous life of cruising around in awesome vehicles. And sometimes I wonder if I chose the right profession. But tell me, what are you driving right now?
I got delivered to just yesterday. It was the BMW M135i.
Ooh, look at you.
Yeah, which I'm quite looking forward to, actually. It's the first time I've sampled the new 1 Series, and to get it as a 135i would be, is a really nice spec to get. Unfortunately, the downside is, as we were chatting earlier about how long we get the cars for, BMW is one of the manufacturers that has 4-day test cars. So the car arrived yesterday. It goes back on Monday. So I have to make the most use of it this weekend, which is what I'll be doing.
Yeah, you need to do the most this weekend, and under the guise, of course, of travel, of checking out. I'm looking at a pull out from Sowetan's travel segment, and they've listed Gauteng's hidden treasures. And you could do well to go to Magali's Mountain Lodge, for instance, or head on over to the Hennops hiking trails. You know, all in the spirit of getting in some fresh air and exercise and social distancing. Why not? Right?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for those tips. I think I'll take them on.
All right, fantastic. Give me a credit there on the podcast review. Spike, absolutely. It's always a pleasure chatting to you, and you and I will catch up again soon. Really enjoyed that conversation. And of course, you can catch Spike Ballantyne on his podcast. He is the host of
Eat, Spike? Sleep, Drive, Repeat.
There you go. Eat, Sleep, Drive, Repeat. Always a pleasure. Chat soon, Spike. Have a good one.
Thanks, Rafila. You too.
All right. Thank you.